A penniless orphan with no beauty, no connections, and no prospects dares to demand equality with the man she loves. In 1847, this premise was nothing short of scandalous. Charlotte Bronte's Jane Eyre didn't just tell a love story, it detonated Victorian conventions about women, class, and power. Published under a male pseudonym because female authors were dismissed as frivolous, the novel introduced readers to a heroine who refused to be anyone's inferior. Jane Eyre speaks her mind, challenges authority, and walks away from the love of her life rather than compromise her dignity. Nearly two centuries later, her fierce independence still feels radical. This isn't a fairy tale where beauty wins the prince. It's a psychological revolution where integrity wins everything. Jane's story begins at Gateshead Hall, where her aunt, Mrs. Reed, treats her like a moral stain. Her cousin John bullies her mercilessly, once throwing a book that draws blood. When Jane fights back, she's punished by being locked in the Red Room where her uncle died. Alone in that chamber, she confronts crushing injustice. No one protects her. No one believes her. Something in Jane hardens into steel. Before leaving for boarding school, she confronts Mrs. Reed. "I am not deceitful. If I were, I should say I loved you, but I declare I do not love you." Lowood Institution promises education, but delivers systematic degradation. Director Mr. Brocklehurst preaches Christian humility while his family parades in silk and velvet. Students eat burnt porridge and trudge through snow in inadequate clothing. Yet Lowood gives Jane her first true friend. Helen Burns endures punishment with supernatural patience, believing suffering purifies the soul. Jane insists on dignity in this life. When Helen dies of consumption, Jane carries her gentleness forward without surrendering her demand for fairness. After 8 years, Jane craves something larger. She does something audacious. She advertises for work as a governess, taking her future into her own hands. Thornfield Hall offers Jane refuge, spacious rooms, a kind housekeeper, a pleasant pupil. But strange laughter echoes from the attic at night. Jane's first meeting with Edward Rochester happens on a frozen road where his horse has slipped. She helps him without knowing who he is, establishing their relationship outside the usual master-servant hierarchy. Rochester defies romantic convention, neither handsome nor charming, with dark, heavy features and brusque manner. But their conversations crackle with intellectual electricity. When he asks if she finds him attractive, she answers honestly, "No, sir." Instead of taking offense, he's delighted by someone who won't flatter him. But Thornfield harbors darkness. One night, Jane wakes to find Rochester's bed curtains on fire and saves his life. He offers no explanation, only cryptic warnings. He hosts house parties where beautiful Blanche Ingram seems destined to become his wife, forcing Jane to watch while concealing her own growing love. When Rochester finally proposes, revealing Blanche was merely a ploy to provoke jealousy, Jane accepts with fierce joy. "It is my spirit that addresses your spirit, just as if both had passed through the grave and we stood at God's feet, equal as we are." Jane's wedding day arrives under ominous signs, her torn veil, unsettling dreams, a sense of foreboding. At the church, a stranger reveals the devastating truth. Rochester already has a wife. Bertha Mason lives locked in Thornfield's attic, violently insane, the source of the mysterious laughter Jane has heard for months. The woman who set Rochester's bed on fire wasn't a servant, it was his wife. Rochester doesn't deny it. He leads the wedding party to see Bertha, then explains how his father and Bertha's family tricked him into marriage, concealing her hereditary insanity. His plea is desperate. "Stay anyway. Be my mistress if you can't be my wife." Jane's struggle is devastating. She loves Rochester completely and has nowhere to go. But something deeper, her sense of self-worth, her integrity, refuses to bend. "I care for myself," she declares. "The more solitary, the more friendless, the more unsustained I am, the more I will respect myself." She recognizes that becoming Rochester's mistress would transform her from equal to possession. Laws and principles matter most precisely when breaking them seems easiest. Before dawn, she leaves Thornfield with nothing but the clothes she's wearing. Jane's flight plunges her into literal wilderness. She boards a coach going anywhere, accidentally leaving behind her few possessions. With no money or plan, she wanders the moors, sleeping outdoors, begging for food, facing constant rejection. One farmer offers her bread meant for his pig. Reduced to absolute destitution, Jane contemplates death. Just as her strength fails, she discovers Morehouse, home of the Rivers family. Initially turned away, Jane collapses on the doorstep. St. John Rivers insists on bringing her inside. During recovery, Jane finds something she's never had, family. Diana and Mary Rivers become the sisters she's always craved, matching her in intellect and values. When Jane discovers they're actually her cousins, her uncle's legacy connecting them, she insists on dividing her unexpected inheritance equally among them. This wilderness period serves as Jane's crucible. Stripped of everything, status, resources, even identity, she uses the alias Jane Elliott, she discovers her core self remains intact. The suffering confirms that leaving Rochester was principled rather than impulsive. St. John arranges for her to become village schoolmistress, allowing her to maintain independence. She's no longer anyone's dependent or possession. She belongs to herself. St. John Rivers presents a different danger than Rochester, not passion, but purpose, not love, but duty. Handsome as a classical statue and just as cold, he plans to become a missionary in India and decides Jane should accompany him as his wife. Not because he loves her, he's brutally honest about that, but because she'd be useful. God and nature intended you for a missionary's wife, he insists. Jane offers to go as his assistant, not his wife. St. John rejects it flatly, marriage or nothing. He wants an instrument, not a partner. The contrast is stark. Rochester offered passionate love without legal marriage. St. John offers legal marriage without love. Jane refuses both, insisting on authenticity in law and emotion. As St. John pressures her with prayer and religious rhetoric, she feels herself weakening. At the critical moment, she hears Rochester's voice calling her name across the miles. This mysterious communion gives her strength to resist St. John's final appeal and return to the man she never stopped loving. Jane's inheritance grants her financial independence. She returns to Rochester by choice, not necessity. But Thornfield is gone. Bertha Mason set it ablaze and perished. Rochester, attempting to save everyone, lost a hand and his sight. He now lives isolated at Ferndean. Their reunion ranks among literature's most moving scenes. When his dog Pilot recognizes Jane, the blind Rochester reaches out desperately. Her declaration, "I am Jane Eyre, I have found you out," signals both physical return and complete self-possession. Suffering has humbled Rochester into genuine repentance. His disabilities eliminate their former power imbalance. When he worries she'll find him repulsive, Jane responds, "I love you better now when I can really be useful to you than I did in your state of proud independence." This isn't submission, it's equality fulfilled. The famous conclusion, "Reader, I married him," emphasizes Jane's agency. She is the subject who chooses. After 10 years, she declares herself supremely blessed because she's preserved her identity within mutual respect. Rochester partially recovers his sight, enough to see their firstborn son, symbolizing redemption without erasing consequences. Jane's revolutionary power lies in insisting a woman's moral journey matters as deeply as any man's, that female selfhood isn't merely preparation for marriage, but a story of equal significance. Jane struggles to maintain dignity without status, to find love without sacrificing integrity, to balance passion with principle, remain urgently relevant. Her declaration, "I am a free human being with an independent will," still resonates because the battle for authentic selfhood never ends. In a world constantly pressuring us to compromise ourselves, Jane Eyre reminds us, walk away from what degrades you, even when it costs everything. Your integrity is the only possession no one can take.